I'm with Greg Madison. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Serge.
So, Greg, how did you come to focusing?
I first was introduced to focusing by a psychology professor, Don Kiken, who is still active in the focusing world. That was back when I was doing my undergraduate degree in psychology in, I think it was probably about 1981 or so when I first came across focusing through him. Mm-hmm. And right from the beginning, focusing and my other interests, if you want to call them interests, kind of were woven together. I, at that time, in my university life, I was very interested in existentialism and phenomenology, and particularly in sort of death, sort of our mortality and how we understand the fact that we must die and come to terms with it in some way. Mm-hmm. So I did a study along with Don Kiken on sort of an age progression fantasy where people would imagine themselves getting older and older right up to the moment of their death, and then half the people would just talk about the experience and the other half of the people would go through a focusing session.
Wow.
My interest at that time was that focusing might be one way of kind of getting somehow beyond or deeper or underneath the kind of dialogue that we can often have around death or sort of significant aspects of existence. We can talk about those things very easily, but it's kind of a way of talking that doesn't actually touch the experience. In fact, it's a way of talking that often elevates us far above the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was interested in the ability of focusing to kind of really allow us to more deeply contemplate what does death mean to us. And the people that went through the focusing experience compared to the people that just talked about it in sort of the everyday ways we can talk about death and not really be impacted by it. The focusing people ended up, most of them, having a much deeper kind of significant experience. I remember one young woman who came out of the room where she was guided through the focusing experience. She came out in tears, but she kept reassuring me, I'm not upset.
Mm-hmm.
The tears were really that she had realized how deeply important it was to her to have her own children. And she had never really realized that before. She came out with almost an urgency to be a mother. And the tears were just a recognition of the deep significance of that to her. So that's where I first learned about focusing. And along with using it in research, I also began to use it in my own life. And I learned it mostly from Jean's first little book, Focusing,
mm-hmm.
and mostly focused on my own to start with, which I found very effective. And as I continued on through my university, my clinical training, all that sort of thing, focusing continued to be sort of woven into anything new that I learned. So it started right near the beginning for me, but it started alongside this kind of existential interest, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, it's a very, very powerful example that experience you had with the letting people talk about death or focus about death, and that sense that to talk or to be in contact with an experience like that, it took, in a way, getting out of ordinary language, ordinary way of relating to words and to language, and going into focusing in order to be able to get in touch with the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that in my own practice as a therapist, for example, I think that often language can disguise and maybe not mislead, but sort of, rather than an avenue into experience, it can often be an avenue away from experience. And especially if the topic is something that is potentially quite evocative.
So, I'm not sure whether this leads us in a direction that might be different from what you had in mind, but I see definitely a connection with the sacred, with a sense of entering a different space, and all the notions of sacred and ritual might be connected to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's, and for me, that's a very appropriate connection. I don't know if I would use the word sacred, although I think it's a useful word. But it definitely, for me, focusing has always been about a way of accessing a space within my own experience. And there's something about that space that feels deeply true to me and is always beyond language.
Yeah. Yeah, a space that feels deeply true and is always beyond language.
Yeah. In fact, and this, again, I suppose, reverberates through my interest in psychotherapy, it's the distinction between, well, as Jean talks about, the implicit and explicit. It's the distinction between how we kind of, in words, often try to nail things down and sort of say, oh, that's it, and sort of with the assumption that that's it forever. I've got that covered now. I don't need to go back to that. But the thing that I value the most is undoing that. Whenever I feel like I've come to a kind of a conclusion, I try to work to undo it. Because if I can undo it so that I'm not hanging on to something substantial, then I enter that space. And that space to me is extremely valuable.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a space where instead of being nailed down, there's a fluidity.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's a fluidity, and it's also, it's a space where received meanings fall away. And it's a space where there's nothing to hold on to. Nothing tangible to hold on to. Tangible is not quite the right word. Nothing explicit to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's not an experience of being lost. It's an experience, for me, it's an experience of being found, but found in it's very difficult to say. I can't say that. It's like there's two things that come to me. It's like being found in a very expansive space,
mm-hmm.
a space that's beyond myself.
Yeah.
And that to me is a sensitivity that. Focusing has been my way of accessing that, although I suspect I was kind of stumbling in that direction anyway. Focusing has been the way for me to access that and to kind of dwell in that almost non-attached kind of way. Now and then, it's unfortunately, I can't stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But now and then, I do have that experience, and I deeply value that. So, yeah, I think the word sacred or the word spiritual or whatever word you want to use.
It actually the words as you talked more about it, the words feel impoverished, like spiritual and sacred, and I enjoyed that description of the space where things don't have that rigidity, don't have that set meaning, and there is, you said, an expansiveness and a sense of a space larger than you where you dwell and you, that you enjoy being from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can feel it a little bit as we talk. it starts to kind of creep in a little bit. So that's when I kind of pause. I'm actually trying to stay with that long enough to find a way of describing it. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm reminded that it's in some recent work that I've done on something that I call existential migration, which was provoked by my studies in existential psychotherapy, especially the German philosopher Heidegger has an idea about our primordial way of being in the world is to be not at home. It's a kind of encounter the strangeness of the world, almost like we don't quite belong here in some way. Mm-hmm. And that whole notion really struck me. I kind of thought, why, since this is the only place we've ever known, why should we not feel at home here? So that kind of really stuck with me in my training.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me partly because it resonated. The experience I've just been talking about could be described as an experience of kind of not being at home. So
the experience of not being at home, the experience of not at home.
Yeah.
Do you want to just, can we maybe stay a little bit with that? Describe it or?
I wonder if we can. Let's try.
Right.
I can describe it best maybe if I talk about how I came into the research topic.
Okay.
Just a little bit, because I think that will actually bring me right back into it. I went to visit a friend of mine in India, and I had never been to India before. And I remember waking up the morning after I arrived and looking out across, it was in Calcutta where he was staying, and looking out across the city and feeling very alive and very relieved. I felt incredibly relieved that a place so different, so foreign, still existed. It was such a visceral experience for me. And I started to wonder about that. Why should I feel relieved? And it was for me, that was partly an experience of encountering some kind of difference and strangeness and definitely a not belonging. There was nothing I could reference as I looked across that city. There was nothing, not even a familiar advertising sign or anything that sort of reminded me of the world I had just come from. And for me, that kind of put me into that sort of non-attached state, mm-hmm. where I feel very insecure and very, very alive. It's a kind of, it's a very difficult to describe, but it's a kind of a buzzing aliveness.
Yeah. So that's a space where none of the familiar markers, not even advertising signs, nothing that you know is there, and that there's a place, a way of feeling very insecure and at the same time very alive, sort of buzzing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and as I hear that back, I can begin to sort of remember that bodily a little bit. That to me is an experience of not being at home. Mm-hmm. And it's an experience that I seek.
Yeah. Yeah, so that experience of not being at home.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny combination of being at home and not being at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of returning to a state that kind of feels like home for me, but is not the kind of home that we typically talk about as home. It's not kind of, it's not familiar. It's not sort of cozy. It doesn't sort of hold me in a comforting way. It's not kind of containing. It's almost the opposite of all those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The opposite of cozy, containing, familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much a flow and very much a kind of an openness. It is an experience of being beyond myself in some way. Beyond myself in the small way that I would maybe hold myself most often.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if that resonates for you at all.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I was just thinking of what you were saying, the experience of flow and a state of being. So that, and actually for me, what it evokes is not Calcutta, but, you know, Amsterdam, early morning after a night of not sleeping very much and having a coffee at a terrace, and kind of that sense of seeing the world through a different way of being that's a mixture of very tired but very alert at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so there is a distortion in the way the world is that is both, you know, uncomfortable but very comfortable in some strange way.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose my question when I hear you describe it that way is whether it's a distortion or whether it's a much more direct contact.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say there's something about a direct contact, or, you know, I hesitate to say it's more real, but certainly at the very least it's another face of it or another aspect of it that, you know, I normally don't see. And so there's the pleasure of discovery of, there is also that angle. So even something that is as familiar as a Western town actually can look so different and can look so remote.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I wonder what it is that allows that kind of state to arise.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's not just, it doesn't just come upon one, although sometimes I think it can do that, but I think it's also possible to invite it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, often when I talk about it, depends on who I'm talking to, but even in this conversation, though we're on the other, you know, separate sides of the world, I can feel it coming a little bit. There's something about talking about it with someone else who can relate that begins to allow myself to kind of
it's like an invitation.
Yeah.
And there is little, because it's not going to a place, it's really a state. So there's something about just exchanging some signals or something that helps, you know, go more into that space.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's something that I deeply value.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. It's something also that I value in my practice as a therapist. I'm just realizing that as I talk to you now.
Yeah.
I think it could be partly maybe this, I don't know if this is true or not, but at the moment I'm thinking it could be partly that knowing focusing gives me a confidence in being able to let go. I think that's probably true. I teach students quite a bit, and I think the students that find it very difficult to let go of theory are students that don't really have that experience, aren't really in contact with that experience of a place they could let go to within themselves.
Because that sense of not letting go of theory is that attachment to rigid concepts and meanings and forms, and it's very different from that enjoyment of just actually noticing that as the structure, the rigid meanings disappear. It's not a scary place, but it's actually, well, maybe a little scary. There's also something very enjoyable about it.
Yeah, and it's a willingness not to know. It's a willingness not to pin down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess for me, when I think of the kind of interweaving or whatever you want to call that between focusing and existential psychotherapy, the focusing gives me that confidence to dwell in a kind of an unknowing state. A state, it's a kind of knowing, but it's also a kind of unknowing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of experientializing of an existential approach for me is very important. It allows the therapist to not have to hold on or sort of import theory or philosophy, using philosophy as theory or any of those things. You can actually try to be as open as possible and totally unknowing, and trusting the unpredictability of the encounter.
Yeah.
To just trust that something, that what happens is what should happen.
Yeah. Which is easier said than done.
Yeah.
And so that's really a part about being in that space, as opposed to just making sense of trying to make sense in an ordinary way of what the client is saying or doing.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that the difference for me is very, very palpable. I certainly know when I'm in that space and I know when I'm not in that space.
So when you notice you're not in that space, what's the experience of noticing it? What does it feel like? How do you notice it? What's the reaction?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's an experience of retreating into something. It's an experience of retreating and clutching on to something.
Mm-hmm.
It feels for me, I'm tempted to say less authentic, but that's not very concrete. It feels...
Well, what I hear from that almost is that maybe part of that experience is maybe judgment. So a way to, from that experience, a way to characterize it, that experience is maybe going to be a bit judgmental.
Yes. Yeah, it is, because it feels like it's a pulling back from a way of being with myself or with the client that would be more courageous.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I thought you were going to ask this, but this is what I was thinking just before you asked me that question.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, how do I get back once I've kind of retreated into that smaller kind of space?
Right, right. I was thinking exactly about that, and I thought actually, in a way, my own experience is before I get back is that little experience of, you know, how does it feel as I am in it? Because in a way, trying to leave that space in a knee-jerk way is difficult.
Yeah.
So how do you find the bridge between that space and the other one?
Yeah. For me, you know, the thing that occurs to me is that what I do is, and the first thing I was going to say is that what I do is I become very phenomenological.
Mm-hmm.
I become very descriptive. I try to get much, much closer to the client again. And that kind of, there's something about that step that allows me to shed a little bit. But I think what I do more exactly is I go back to a very full-bodied listening.
Mm-hmm.
And simply listening and reflecting as much from my stomach as possible. And that kind of brings me back to a more open place.
So would it be fair to say that, you know, to use a different sense of the word focusing, it's focusing on something else instead of your mind, focusing more on your body, focusing on the
yeah.
client's movements, the client's saying, and your body, the resonance in your body?
Yes. In fact, I think it might even be the opposite. It's focusing on my body,
yeah,
not on the client.
Not on the client.
And it's through my body that I regain access to the client's experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of putting myself first in a very embodied way, kind of climbing down from a place where I'm anxiously trying to pull out things that I could do that might be helpful, and instead kind of allowing myself to kind of gently fall back down into myself so that my body becomes the primary focus for me, and then I access my way back into the client's being.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for me, that's a very important part of focusing-oriented therapy, is my own focusing experiencing during the session.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily be attempting to invite the client into a focusing kind of relationship with themselves, although sometimes I would do that. For me, it's more kind of my being with my own felt sensing in the session that makes it a focusing therapy.
Yeah. So that your reactions are going to be coming from that focusing place, and then in that way influence the session and directly the client.
I'm tempted to say it slightly differently.
Good.
Yeah, my reactions, I guess I'm tempted to say that it's a sensitivity that arises from our being together. When I'm really there with a client, within myself with a client, I really feel like I'm in a shared territory, a shared experiential territory, that actually what I'm feeling is my feeling together with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, when I'm sensing that way of being with a client, I pick up on things very, very differently. I hear things very differently. And it's almost like when they say a word, I'm sensing all of the woven intricacy underneath that word that comes from them.
Mm-hmm.
I could get it wrong. I can say it wrong, of course. But I do have the sense that I'm not actually sensing just, I'm not sensing myself. I wouldn't say it that way.
Yeah,
I would say that I'm sensing our kind of wovenness or something.
Yeah, so that's a state of having the openness, the ability to sense not just you but the client, and not just the client in a defined way, but in that subtle variety of things that are not just defined, but maybe all of that experience.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. I had an experience a couple of weeks ago with a client where the client was saying something about, I'll keep it kind of vague, but the client was saying, you know, in effect was saying, well, I'm not so interested in that part of me. I think I can do better leaving it behind, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, because I was in that sort of place with him, I immediately said, because I felt it, I felt it very much in my body, I felt a connectedness to that part of him. And I said that I would be very sad to leave that part of him behind.
Mm.
And he was very impacted by that. It was just a slight nuance in the way I said it that really caught him off guard. And he said to me, where did that come from? It's almost like at a certain level that shouldn't have followed in our conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
But on another level, that was exactly what should have followed.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell him where it came from. I could come up with explanations, and I did a little bit of that, but I knew that I wasn't actually hitting where it really came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe this is also another example of that not at home place.
Yeah. Yes, it is for me. It definitely is. That's when I feel most alive in my work, is when I'm kind of dwelling in that kind of the unknown, the insubstantial or something, whatever you want to call it. And I suppose in a way, I'm reluctant to admit this, but I suppose in a way part of my emphasis in working with a person is kind of to encourage them to loosen some of their own assumptions about life.
Mm-hmm.
Enough that they get just it depends on the person, of course, but enough so that they get, you know, a little influence from that place, from that kind of state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a place where change is possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not, you know, necessarily mechanical change, but some kind of a really way of possibly being very different.
Yeah, it's a way of being that is change. If that makes any sense to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just as you're saying that, to just see how in a way we're, again on that terrain of, existential philosophy, but in a very, very experiential way.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is moment by moment. This is everyday life. This is something that's very concrete. It's not big, yeah, abstruse books.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That is definitely the way I think about it. I think about what I would call an experiential existential form of therapy. I think of it as a moment to moment, kind of almost a moment to moment philosophical depth.
Mm-hmm.
To something that is very concretely felt and very empirical. It is very, very empirical. It is not abstract.
So as we have, we're approaching the end of the conversation, is this something that you might want to say? To conclude this discussion, or put a dot 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 as opposed to a conclusion.
Yeah, it seems like making a conclusion is contrary to what I've been saying.
I know, I just realized it as I was saying it.
Yeah, but there is something I think I do want to say. I'm surprised how quickly the time has gone. Yeah, the thing that I want to say is that for me, the focusing aspect of that's kind of woven through all of this is it's a kind of focusing that moves me further out. It's like I go to the context of what I'm focusing on. I might be focusing on some specific life event or situation. And then I want to move to the context of that. What's around that? And then I want to move out to the context of that. So focusing is a kind of a step-by-step expansiveness so that I'm questioning the context within which I'm focusing.
Mm-hmm.
And over again. And that, to me, is one way of kind of accessing that broader, expansive state of flow or whatever you want to call it. It's a slightly different angle on focusing, I think.
Maybe let's stay a little bit longer with that notion of context.
Yeah.
It's not, say, the issue itself in a narrowly defined way, but in a way some kind of a willingness, invitation to open up to something larger in which it's contained or it's part of.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. If I'm focusing on a relationship, then I begin to focus on relationship itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, rather than getting closer and closer to the nub of something, I'm getting wider and wider.
Yeah.
It's more an outward motion than an inward motion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and for me, I guess the last thing that I could think of saying on that is that sometimes I focus with my eyes open because that helps. It helps me go out, further out. And it's a very, again, as I said before, it's for me, it's very palpable, it's very cellular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so that sense of if your eyes are open, you're going to go out farther.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting because that's my experience. I'm facing, I'm in the country, I'm facing a window and there's a lake and trees and nature going far into the distance. So I very much have that expansion, that sense of expansion of that's not, in contrast to looking at the outside, but really helped by taking in the outside.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And in that whole setting, you might focus on yourself within that expansiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of asking yourself, what's around this? And what's around that? And what's even around that?
Yeah. Yeah, which is a different experience than making yourself the center of the universe.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's looking at the context within which you exist.
You know, I'm just noticing that last phrase, and it sounds like such a nice statement, looking at yourself within the context within which you exist.
Yeah.
Sounds like almost a great summary for part of what you've been saying.
Yeah, okay, it's a summary for now.
Okay. Thanks, Greg.
Okay, thank you very much.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.